This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy from Armature, providing software solutions for conformity assessment, standards, and policy management. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we got double trouble. We have Karen Evans, partner, KE&T Partners, and Julie M. Anderson, Chief Operating Officer and Managing Director for Civitas Group. Good morning, ladies. How are you?
Good morning.
We're going to talk about security today, and we may have some differing opinions on different types of security and all kinds of different focal points here. I think we could do an eight-hour-a-day show on security for Federal News Radio, all kinds of fun topics here. I want to focus on a couple reports and talk about a little bit mobile and talk about federal agencies and how they can use some of this information we can provide today. But before we begin, let's get a little background on you, Karen Evans. Probably no one's ever heard your name in this community. Maybe you can tell people a little bit about your background in case they don't already know.
So I am retired now after 28 years of federal government service, with the last 6 years that I did was as the administrator of e-government and information technology at the Office of Management and Budget. And now what I'm doing is some of my own consulting, but also working in cybersecurity, dealing with the U.S. Cyber Challenge. So I focus as the national director for the U.S. Cyber Challenge, which is really trying to attract talent through competitions into the cyber workforce. And the last initiative that I'm really working on that I'd like to include in here is SafeGov, which is an online forum that's really discussing security and privacy issues dealing with cloud implementations for the federal agencies as well as state and local governments.
SafeGov.org, is
yes,
that correct?
Yes, absolutely.
And Julie, what's your background, please?
Yes, so my work experience and academic study is both in public policy and business, that intersection between the public and the private sectors. So I served in both the Clinton and the Obama administration, most recently at VA as the head policy and planning official under President Obama. I spent 8 years at IBM in the public sector global business services, and I currently work at Civitas Group, which is a strategic advisory services firm that focuses on government services serving the federal government.
And the URL for the Civitas would be?
CivitasGroup.com.
CivitasGroup.com. Great. Boy, I mean, there's so many topics to go down here and so many things to talk about. Let's focus on this report that came out a couple months back from CSIS. And Karen, I think you had a hand in structuring this report. And talk about why would you even bother to waste your time on this report, this white paper, this discussion of security? What was the objective?
So the report actually came out from the Center for Strategic and International Studies. And there was a group prior to this, the Commission for Cybersecurity for the 44th Presidency, to really, that group put together overall series of recommendations for the incoming Obama administration for the first term. And this is an outgrowth from that. And one of the things that everybody kept asking the group that was involved in that was, okay, if the legislation doesn't pass in Congress dealing with cybersecurity, how to redo things, how to revisit the Federal Information Security Management Act, what could be done to take the things that are going really well in the federal agencies to improve cybersecurity? And how could you make sure that that's maintained through multiple administrations? And so the way that we went about doing this was saying, okay, if you're not going to get legislation, what's the next authoritative document? And that is the Office of Management and Budget circulars that are out there. So in particular, the one that deals with information technology, the investments, cybersecurity, how you manage all of these resources is what we call A130. And this really took a look at that and what kind of changes you could make to A130 absent of any kind of congressional types of actions that would then move the ball further on down for the federal agencies and improve cybersecurity.
So why buy a snow shovel if you got two in the garage or you can use something else?
Let's
take a look at the existing authorities and see if those can be implemented properly or maybe amended in order to actually
Absolutely.
Use the ones. Good. I read the report, and what's interesting is the little subtitle is Spending Scarce Taxpayer Dollars on Security Programs That Work. Thank you. It's my tax money, too. I mean, I don't want to waste anything. I mean, this is scarce. Tax, the funding is scarce these days, isn't it?
Well, and you have to remember there's three former OMB officials working on this, Frank Reeder, Dan Chenock, and myself. And so, of course, our focus is always going to be what's the most efficient use of the budget dollars. So that was why we were really focused on that. And then the other piece also is Alan Paller is one of the authors on this, as well as Jim Lewis, who is our leader from the Center for Strategic and International Studies, is that you really want to spend the money wisely. And I know Alan's been a previous guest of yours and has a passion in this area. And what you want to move it from producing reports that may not necessarily really reflect what's going on in an agency or a component of an agency and really move it to real actionable type of information that can then reduce risk for the nation.
So, Julie, how does your group interact with CSIS and Karen? Where do you fit in this puzzle?
Karen and I work together on this SafeGov initiative, you know, promoting leading practices for securing and enhancing privacy of data and cloud computing in the federal government.
Oh, I get the connection. So your group sponsors?
Is a member of SafeGov.
I see.
Yes. And Karen and I are working together on what I would consider the next step that builds on this great foundation that the CSIS report laid, that's really about some key policy frameworks. As you mentioned, you know, why create something new when you can knit together and make more effective some of the existing tools that are already out there? What we're proposing to extend the CSIS report in terms of next steps is to actually take the framework and make it into a useful model that could be implemented in agencies, so that key security officials, offices of inspectors general, and GAO, those who have responsibility for evaluating the, I would say, level of security compliance within the federal government, have some new tools, some new ways of thinking about and evaluating that security and privacy of information within the government.
And just given your background, you've seen a couple different sides of this issue. And
yes.
And you've seen the right side, the left side, and then the IBM side. And it all kind of fits together because you can see from 40,000 feet.
Exactly. And, it is really about truly understanding government's needs and then helping the private sector do its best to meet those needs when we think about the role of the contractors. You know, and as Karen and I know, as well as many of your listeners do who serve in government, it's so easy to get consumed with the daily crisis. And so there are opportunities like the CSIS report and like the follow-on project that Karen and I are working on that really try to harness some of the expertise, whether it be from former government employees, you know, people in the think tank world or in private industry, to really help with the strategic thinking of government and inject some new ideas and work in partnership with our colleagues who are still in the .gov world to help them move the agenda forward to really improve security and privacy.
I had a character in the studio by the name of Todd Park, who is,
yeah.
He's just really an amazing guy. I'm surprised he could sit still in here for an hour. He's just doing everything, and he loves challenges. He loves challenging people. He pushes everyone, and so I think about your cyber challenge. Todd Park would be, hey, cyber challenge, let's have at it, and he'd want to get people together and try to come up with new and creative ways, and I think that's the national director of your cyber challenge. You may be able to work with Todd in this endeavor.
Oh, and absolutely, and this administration has really embraced this approach going forward. The Secretary of Department of Homeland Security has really harnessed a lot of this public-private partnership moving forward to address cybersecurity workforce needs to come up with innovative ways to get people into educational tracks so that they could really understand, what do I have to do when I go to work when somebody starts talking about cybersecurity? Or if I'm going to code applications, for example, how do I put some of these things up front into the application so that it's cheaper in the long run instead of bolting things on at the end? But the real challenge to this is you've got to get the next generation, and I don't even want to say like by age, I just call them the next generation of workers. So this could include veterans coming back that need to get new jobs and to be reemployed. It could be those who are in one set of skills that could transfer over with some training into this field and get them energized and let them know about the opportunities that are there. And by using competitions and by really harnessing that competitive nature, because we rank everything, whether we want to really say that we do or we don't. We do thumbs up and thumbs down on Facebook pages. So it's really harnessing that energy and getting them into an area like cybersecurity so that you can really get the power of the masses working on the problem.
Great. Let's take a quick break and come back, talk more about maybe the security conference in Baltimore where I kind of stumbled on you in the coffee room and talk more about safegov.org. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Karen Evans, partner, KENT Partners, and Julie M. Anderson, Chief Operating Officer and Managing Director at Civitas Group. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio we have Karen Evans, partner, KENT Partners, and Julie M. Anderson, Chief Operating Officer and Managing Director for Civitas Group. Talking about security here, and we talked about the national director of the U.S. Cyber Challenge, Karen. The last time I saw Karen was up in Baltimore. I was at an event up there, and they had 400 people in the room, and I was sitting there with a suit and tie on like a fool, and someone got up and said, and the winner for the security award for GSA is some guy in the back room with a T-shirt and blue hair. And it was amazing, wasn't it, Karen? I mean,
yeah.
He had so much innovation and creativity. The old fuddy-duddies like me are going, how did you figure that out? He might have done it at 2 o'clock in the morning on Red Bull or something, but he figured it out, didn't he?
Well, and you see this all the time, and that's one of the things I really am excited about, the involvement that I have with the U.S. Cyber Challenge. For example, one of the things that we do online for a qualifying round, where Julie actually then came to the camp and she got to see the results of this work with the campers, it was that we do this online competition, and when there's a group of us working on it, one group only wants to allow them to have one shot at it. There's the other group who come from the academia who want to have multiple shots for the students. And their view is, well, they might be afraid the first time. You know, they want to get in there and really kind of learn it. And my view is that you learn, we're looking at multiple dimensions of the personality. So this is what the typical competitor does. They play the first time to guarantee that they get an invitation to the camp. They play the second time and you see the score go down, because what they're actually doing now is downloading the quiz engine to try to analyze it, because you get scored on number of questions right in the shortest amount of time. And the questions are fed to you randomly. So what they're now doing is trying to engineer an answer so that the third time that they play, what they've done is they have created an application that does all the right answers in anticipation of the way the questions are going to be fed to them, so that they will have the highest score in less than a minute. So you know that they've already done that. Like, we've had scores where people have gotten like 96% in 29 seconds.
Wow.
So the group that only wants the one shot views that as cheating. Me, as a potential employer, views that as creativity, innovation, somebody's willing to really analyze what's going on. I'd hire that person in a second.
Really a gamer. That sounds like
that's
a gamer,
right.
Doesn't it?
That's
it really
right.
Does. And that's the game. And because the person who's trying to attack us, let's say from somewhere in Asia, is going to be doing it 24 hours a day and not stop until they figure it out. So you might got to have someone
and
here.
What really motivates them is not they want the training that they get at the camp, but they also want their name to stay up on the game board.
Did you say bragging rights?
Yes, that's exactly what it is. And it's not their name, but it's their handle that they use. And they wanted to stay up there because we keep the results of each competition up on the website. And so that's why they do what they do, which is really great. So if you can take all of that and then bring them in and then get them onto a path so that they'll, if they're not in a science and technology field, that they'll switch over. For example, a lot of the people that have come through this are journalism people, arts and sciences, communications type of folks. They've come through and they're really energized by what they can do, and they'll switch or they'll take additional classes. And we've had people that have switched majors and have moved into this field, which is exactly what we're trying to do.
If someone is listening to this during spring training for the Nationals, where could they get more information on the Cyber Challenge?
So they need to go to the uscyberchallenge.org website.
That's simple, huh?
And it's that simple. And our competitions will be posted out there, and we are gearing up for the next season. So think of it as spring training. We're gearing up for that. And the major competition will be in the April time period for the camps.
Interesting. And this isn't limited to people with blue hair.
It's
everything from 18 to 60, everyone in between.
Everybody
who
in
cares?
Between.
Because you need that diversity of opinion, because all kinds of different people are attacking. You got to figure it out. From
yeah. And actually, we're really trying to push really hard for a lot of diversity. So I do have to say that we just finished our last go around of high school competition, and our winner was a female. So I'm so excited. Our national winner was a female from a high school in Indiana. And she placed 15th last year nationally, and she won first place this year. So it's very exciting.
Oh, she got mad, huh?
Yeah. So it's very exciting, very exciting.
So what about your challenges, Julie? What does Civitas Group, and how does it interact with some of these challenges?
Yeah, well, specifically to the Cyber Challenge event that I was fortunate to participate in at Karen's invitation, you know, I spoke to that group about it's a remarkably talented group of folks, and as you and Karen,
some musicians a background,
yes,
the backgrounds are
right.
Mathematics.
They are truly creatives in every sense of the word, and to a certain degree, that creativity is still robust and active, and it hasn't been limited or constrained by, you know, kind of traditional organizational structures or job processes or the, you know, that happens to a lot of us when we put on a suit when we go to work in the morning. My purpose in talking with that group was really to encourage them to consider careers of working in cybersecurity in government. That certainly there are many private sector opportunities, particularly that dangle large salaries in front of them. But I challenge them, no pun intended, to consider psychological compensation along with job satisfaction and what they could pursue in terms of their careers of really helping the country, both from a national security perspective, but also from the federal civilian, all the data and assets that need to be protected on a daily and weekly basis, and really lending their talents to government service.
Now, I have a friend who, my son has a friend who's a pilot, and he decided to get a job at the FAA because he didn't want them to screw it up. So he was
right.
A software developer and a pilot. He said, no, I'm going to go. God, I want them to screw it up. I'm going to put my thumbprint on this. And that's a thumbprint on something like bragging rights, isn't it, Karen?
Absolutely. And thank goodness, because they're working on the next generation air traffic control system. So you want some of the best and brightest folks in there that are thinking about things like safety and cybersecurity and privacy as they're developing this and using new technologies that maybe some of the folks who have developed those technologies or potential applications have not thought about that. So when you start integrating that in and really looking at what should those services be, you know, you want to be able to be on an airplane and use your mobile device, right? And so they're looking at how to do that. Well, the next generation air traffic controller system is going to be able to facilitate that dual purpose of those networks so that they're using it and you don't necessarily have to turn off your device when you're up in the air. And that those types of things really need to be looked at, but they bring along a whole host of new implementation issues as you go forward.
And Julie, the problem is which mobile device is it going to be? It could be in December, Karen will have one device. In March of next year, it should be, and in July, she'll have the who knows what pad. And so you have to be flexible and dynamic in this, which comes back to the initial topic about dynamically controlling security events.
Yes, hence the importance of standards,
yeah.
Right? And as my friend and colleague Karen always says, it's about getting the fundamentals right before you start thinking about the specific technologies. And so the government has made good strides in the last 4 to 8 years about getting some of those standards in place around security and privacy, both of data and systems. But there's much more to do. And so, you know, one thing that she and I are focused on in this next project that we're working on for an evaluation framework is really to help government kind of define what it will and will not accept as risk. And then think about, you know, based on those standards, then think about what are the mobile devices that should be connected? What are the new mechanisms? What are the new platforms that government should use in order to accomplish its missions?
We're going to have to take a break real quick here. When we come back, I want to talk more about the report. What's interesting about the report from CSIS is mentioning the State Department as being a lead in some of these areas. And I was reading it saying, well, duh, they're in some of the worst places in the world. I mean, State Department in small countries in Africa are probably like, might as well have a big old target on it and have all four walls of the big target and people coming after them. And some of the lessons the State Department has learned is what you're incorporating in this report, aren't you?
Absolutely. And really trying to move things from policy-based, report-based, to really dynamic measurement and dynamic management of the risk. And so who would need that more than the State Department on a daily basis based on what's going on and how they hook into local networks that are in those countries and then come on out and they have a State Department network and a bunch of other different things. So when you're starting to look at, okay, I have a mobile device because I'm over there in a country, but then I come into the State Department and I'm using the State Department network, how do you secure those? How do you use those so that you're not compromising everything across the board? And that's what John Streifer really made a lot of progress on in the State Department and managing that.
Great. When we come back, talk a little bit more about the report, State Department, and security threats. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Karen Evans, partner, KE&T Partners, and Julie M. Anderson, Chief Operating Officer and Managing Director at Civitas Group. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Karen Evans, partner, KE&T Partners, and Julie M. Anderson, Chief Operating Officer and Managing Director at Civitas Group, talking about computer security kind of writ large. Talked about a report that came out of CSIS. And a lot of my listeners listen online, maybe listen in 2 or 3 months, listen topically. Some of them read blogs, and I'll be blogging about this interview. And you can go to Google and type in John Gilroy blog, and you'll stumble on my blog. And Karen, is there a blog you write? Is there a blog that you read that maybe my listeners might take advantage of in learning about security?
Well, there are blogs that I read. There's a couple. But it's not necessarily security. One is on the economic situation. So there is a really good blog if you want to understand what's happening with the fiscal cliff and everything like that, which is written by Keith Hennessy, and he's out of Stanford. And when I read that one, it makes sense to me about certain things. You kind of have to get rid of some of the opinion, but it really goes through the economic analysis. And then by looking at that, you can tie it over to where cybersecurity vulnerabilities and issues are going to happen because they're tied now. And where we're moving and how things are happening between industry, government, where money's going to be spent, where money's not going to be spent, you can really kind of get the big picture by looking at that. And then, of course, the other stuff that I really track is Federal News Radio. I do a lot of tracking of that. And then I read safegov.org's blogs. And I also post articles out there myself on safegov.org.
Safegov.org. And Julie, your organization, does it have blogs, or how do you communicate with your...
Yeah, so Civitas Group, we actually have a very active website, although there's not a blog portion. We publish market research and thought leadership on a monthly basis. That includes market insights as well as ideas and frameworks for government as well as private companies. We also have an active Twitter account and LinkedIn and Facebook groups that are updated multiple times each week. And like Karen, I also post content on safegov.org, which is a leading resource for really new and interesting ideas. And the purpose there is to have a debate and put some ideas into the public discourse about, again, leading practices for security and privacy of data and systems in the cloud in the federal government. I also read IBM Business of Government blog.
Sure.
And I'm not saying that just as a former IBMer, but it is such a great way to get an analytical view in a few short words of some of the policies related to the management of government, which is obviously my favorite topic. But they have some great authors, they have some great points of view, and I often visit their blog multiple times each week to stay current.
I read blogs about software development because I work for a small company, have a bunch of software developers. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times they have all these little short meetings, sprints and scrums and all this stuff. And they're always hustling us out because they have to meet. The group comes in and comes out and they fight and they leave. And they talk about continuous improvement. And I like continuous improvement software developers. But in the security world, it's a direct application, isn't it? It's continuous
Absolutely.
Improvement. I mean, this is the transition, and this is what the report from CSIS.org is all about, is no. It's not a waterfall methodology. It's a scrum. It's a continuous improvement.
And the big key piece to this, there's a couple key takeaways from the report. One is the continuous monitoring, and that means a lot to a lot of different people. But the big key to that is the automation of it and the data and having it reviewed on a daily basis, not somebody sitting at a terminal for 24 hours a day. But it's the monitoring of the risk and getting that data automated so that you're continuously looking at it. That's what that piece means, and that management is involved and aware. The other piece of this is giving DHS the authorities or solidifying DHS's authority so that federal agencies recognize them as the leader in this area. And that's always been a challenge with DHS. It's hard to believe that they've been in existence for 10 years and you still have people arguing what are their authorities and what should they really be doing in this space. And we just put it out there and said you should do this. But the other piece where it breaks some eggs and gets into the final recommendations is this division between national security systems and non-national security systems. So when you're developing an application, for example, and you brought this up, you develop it with one particular purpose. You don't necessarily say, oh, well, a national security group of people are going to use this application
for X,
and a non-national security group of people are going to use it for over here. You developed it for a purpose. What makes it different is maybe the type of information and then how they actually apply it to their business process. So we're really saying, okay, take a look at the information and how an agency is doing it and get rid of this national security, non-national security piece and start looking at the level of risk associated with it and change the definition because the government's all about definition. So change the definition and really look at information and the management of information and the risk of that. So that, and the example I really like using in this area is if you buy a parking application, it's got to be certified and looked at based on what it's all going to do when it moves into an environment. So everybody should agree that we can agree that GSA, for example, could do this while it's in the cloud through its 3PAO system that they have in FedRAMP. It's then once I start putting information in it that if I'm at the Marine Mammal Commission, my parking permits are going to be a little bit different than if I'm at the CIA where my parking permits are and the information that I put in. And so I'm going to secure that differently and I'm going to do that differently. So now I need incremental security that I add and layer on top of that. And that is diametrically different than the way that we look at things right now. And the gaps between them is what gets exploited, I believe, by our adversaries.
No, Julie, look at your background, different agencies. I mean, there are people I know who switch from one civilian agency to another or maybe to a military. It you can't just split it between, you know, national security and non-national security. It's not black and white.
Right. Right. You know, there are very sensitive data, but for different reasons that are managed by civilian agencies like the VA, you know, that has 8 million unique patients of veterans who've earned their benefits. And when you think about their personal health data and what could be vulnerable to attack or incursion or theft, you know, that's important to those individuals as well as their family members and dependents in a way that is different, but not less important than some of the national security data when we think about threat vulnerabilities and preserving the intelligence and defense networks.
I'm going to a meeting tomorrow with a bunch of doctors, and I keep thinking of the VA, 400,000 employees, and the fellow over there mandated encryption on all the notebooks, and they're all encrypted, and guess what? I don't see anything in front page of the Washington Post anymore,
right.
Not from the VA, because he figured out, he said, hey, guess what? We play by my rules, and he actually made the change, and it worked, didn't it?
Right.
Roger Baker, who is a friend of both mine and Karen's, is a true leader and innovator in not only government but in IT. And he put out that marker and he really issued a challenge. And, you know, private industry as well as the team who works for him stepped up and were able to address what was thought impossible and make it, they made it work. And they have helped enable physicians and nurses working off these tablets in the, you know, 153 hospitals and over 850 clinics across the country to be more mobile, to be more at the bedside of their patients and have their records with them so they can make good decisions.
And I think most of our listeners know, my company has dealt with surgeons. And dealing with a surgeon is not like dealing with someone walking down the street. This is someone who's very bright, very confident, aggressive, and will fight to the and for him to take and mandate physicians and nurses who are very strong personalities to do something.
Yep.
There was a battle of wills there, I think, you know. Yep.
Well, but they have the same goal in mind. So when, and that's what all this comes down to, that everybody, I think, has the same goal in mind. And in this case, you want to preserve the integrity of the information and the privacy of the information of the patient. And that's first and foremost. And you may have varying viewpoints about what's the best way to do that, but a doctor wants to be involved in the diagnosis and the health of the patient. And so the one thing that you don't want to get the doctor and everybody involved in is if there's a breach or a compromise because the doctor wasn't doing something that he was supposed to do, that takes away the doctor from actually working and delivering benefits and health for veterans. And so a doctor or her, they really do not want to get involved in that type of stuff. They want the tools that makes their job easy so that they can get to the same end goal, which is get benefits and treat veterans.
I personally don't want my physician worrying about data breaches or worrying about security. I want him worried about my elbow or my knee,
right,
or I don't, a cold or whatever. It's in, I guess it's spending the right time on the right application.
It's about fulfilling the mission, you know, and everything that Karen and I have worked on and continue to work on together, as well as our colleagues, is about empowering government leaders with the best information possible to make good decisions. And those good decisions are about supporting the mission. And so good IT management, good risk management, good investment in information systems and information data is really about supporting those decision makers at the senior most level.
Risk management, I normally think of financial areas, but risk management really applies in so many areas besides finance as well. Take a break. We can come back, talk more about maybe Twitter handles and a nerdometer test. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, Karen Evans, partner, KE&T Partners, and Julie M. Anderson, Chief Operating Officer and Managing Director at Civitas Group. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, Karen Evans, partner KE&T Partners, and Julie M. Anderson, Chief Operating Officer and Managing Director, Civitas Group, talking security here. We initially started talking about a report that came out of CSIS, and it talks about using existing authorities and trying to maybe move to a more dynamic way of measuring security. Talked about the Civitas Group and safegov.org. But now's a part of the show where I got to ask the tough questions. We take the 10-question test to see if you're a card-carrying nerd. And Karen Evans, we're really going to subject you to this like I subject everyone. The first question is, Karen, the year you bought your first computer?
I believe it was in 1989.
That's respectable. The year your first cell phone?
That one goes back pretty far. That's 1992.
Ooh, that's a weightlifting type phone. We know that.
Yes.
And you've got your own Twitter feed. That is what?
At Evans5560.
Yeah. And if you want to follow me, I'm at Ray Gilray, which makes no sense at all, but that's my thing. And do you have your own blog?
No, but I post my stuff at safegov.org.
Sure. That makes it easy to remember, too. And do you use any online personal backup systems?
And I'm laughing at my note I wrote to you. Nope, I don't use online backup systems.
Well, I think we have some smarts here. I always ask the questions because the security people always go, nope. And what kind of smartphone do you have?
Windows.
Okay. And number of apps on that?
I have two.
Only thinking two. In the nerd scale.
Only
your nerd
two.
Scale is weak. You're probably almost normal here. Okay, we'll see if that's more type of tablet device you have.
I have an iPad.
Okay, and what social networking sites do you participate in?
In Facebook and LinkedIn.
And the last book you read, was it electronic or paper?
It was paper.
Sorry. You're so close to being a nerd. Well, we're just kind of a middling type answers. Now, Julie, we'll see if you can top those. I don't know if you can or not. Julie, when did you bought your first computer?
Well, my folks bought our first computer as a family, the IBM PC Junior.
Chiclet keyboard.
80s.
I know it.
Yes, mm-hmm. That was a unfortunately, was not one of IBM's biggest successes in the market.
I remember it well. And your first cell phone?
$19.99, exclusively for security purposes. It only had 50 minutes per month as part of the plan.
50 minutes per month. Wow. And do you have a Twitter feed?
I do not have a personal Twitter feed, but you can find Civitas Group on our Twitter handle at Civitas Group.
Oh, great. And do you have your own blog?
Not my own blog. Like Karen, I post content to safegov.org and then also thought leadership and market research insights at the Civitas
Group. You're sinking quickly in the nerd scale here. You're probably normal.
Website.
You might be the first normal guest we've ever had. And do you use any online personal backup services?
I do not.
Mm. And what kind of smartphone do you have?
I have an iPhone.
Okay. And how many apps on there?
You mean in addition to what the default? I would say three.
Low on the nerd scale.
And they're very
normal.
Practical.
Yeah. And what kind of tablet device do you have?
An iPad that I use only for personal use.
I thought you were going to say for holding up doors or something.
No. Nope.
Social networking sites you participate in?
Yeah, both LinkedIn and Facebook, but I am a free writing Facebooker, which means I read other people's feeds, but I don't post myself.
A Facebooker? That's put that in your resume.
I'm going to put that Facebooker.
Like
I'm
a bookie and a booker.
Note of that.
Yeah. And the last book you read was electronic or paper?
Electronic on my iPad.
Well, you have a couple scores there. You're probably in the mid. You're kind of like a nerd wannabe, I would say. You're not really a card-carrying nerd, but you're maybe a nerd wannabe. Well, Karen, this is the part of the show where I have my certified and accredited crystal ball, and I hand it over to my guests, and I make them predict the Super Bowl. No Super Bowl prediction here. Where do you think the whole idea of security is going to go in the next 5 to 7 years of the federal government? Are they going to get more flexible and involved in more continuous monitoring, or are they not going to have a choice?
My view is that you're going to have to become more flexible. And I think because of the mobile workforce and that you want to attract people in, that the mobile devices, things that you're asking about the iPads and the types of phones that you have, that's how people interact and that's how they do business. And if you look at the next generation, those devices, I believe themselves, will become authentication devices into multiple types of networks so that they will establish what your persona is. If I'm at home, I'm doing one type of thing. If I'm at work, I'm doing another type of thing. And that will change the security dynamic. So this idea of having a perimeter and there's a firewall and you're going to have all those things, but that's not going to keep people out. It's not keeping them out now. And so you have to shift the way that you're thinking about how do I secure my assets and who is who on the network so that I can reduce the noise and then kick people off who shouldn't be there.
Well, Julie, this comes back to a cyber challenge and trying to recruit people to work for the federal government. I mean, you're not going to be able to recruit young people unless you allow them to have a wide range of mobile devices and an unpredictable mobile device for next year. Isn't that right? I mean, you have to have that flexibility.
Yeah, and I think also a flexibility in a working environment. Right. So it's everything from connecting the individual duties that they perform on a daily basis to the overall mission of protecting cybersecurity, whether it be for a federal civilian or a defense or intel agency. So the opportunity for these folks who are very talented in areas of cyber to come into the government and have that sense of personal satisfaction that what they are doing is contributing to an overall mission is really the key about getting that human capital in the door and working for government agencies.
So, Karen, what's been the response to the white paper that came out at CSIS?
It's really prompted a lot of discussion going forward, especially some of the things that are at the end where we're specifically talking about a capability maturities model, and that's the piece that Julie and I are working on, because that's going to recognize the fact that not all agencies are created equal and will allow you to move to this more continuous monitoring, dynamic monitoring that we're talking about, and then put agencies on an improvement path that is designed for them, but then taking into consideration the position that the federal government wants to be as a whole. So people are really engaged in that. They really like that because that is shifting the paradigm from that, but it's going to take a while for us to get there because they're still focused around IT solutions and how do you move that. But with the opportunities that are there, like with cloud implementation, with mobile devices and all of those things and moving that forward, that's why you need to have this discussion now so that you can then invest for the future.
Julie, it sure sounds a lot like software development here with the capability model, doesn't it? I mean, you're just taking that concept and applying it to security as far as the capability model goes, huh?
True, but with an important distinction, which is the capability maturity model, you know, when created around software development, was really focused on process and making sure that there was compliance with a certain process. What we're proposing is actually a capability maturity model to produce desired outcomes. So certainly a standardized process is important, but we're really focused on the end game, which is, you know, what is it, what qualities, what attributes, what practices are in place around these information systems that will enhance the security and privacy of the systems and data that the government operates and owns.
One of the suggestions was to take and move in a more dynamic manner. I mean, I just think, Karen, that given the folks at NIST fighting with other organizations and DHS, it seems like everyone's kind of trying to cut out their different realm in here. Where does DHS fit in all this, this idea of conformity and being flexible and adaptable?
Well, part of the recommendations in here are actually recommending that DHS set what those evaluation metrics would be. And to Julie's point about what those outcomes are and then how you would measure some of those going forward. The key to this, while all those guys are arguing, and you really have talked about it a lot, they're debating the issues, you pretty much have it described the way that it is right now, is that Julie and I's project is really focused on the inspectors general, because the way to really move this forward is the evaluation that happens by the independent authority. And if we can get them engaged and measuring to the outcomes as well, and not necessarily just a pure compliance piece, but really saying, okay, this group really has it down. They are doing what we consider continuous monitoring. They are managing the risk. That and the IGs are engaged in that, then you're going to see the dynamic switch. Because what the IGs measure and evaluate is what Congress looks at. What GAO evaluates and measures is what Congress looks at. And the secretary looks at that, and the deputy secretary looks at that, which means that it will get the management attention. So this discussion over here will move to trying to get to the outcomes and results.
Yeah, the magic phrase IG make people motivated, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Yes, it does. It's called promotion time. IG could maybe limit some of that. We'd like to spend the rest of the morning here speaking about security, but we have to end this discussion. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guests today, Karen Evans, partner, KE&T Partners, and Julie M. Anderson, Chief Operating Officer and Managing Director, Civitas Group. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.